prison won't be so bad. I can become a born-again Christian. And that'll be good. Because nobody wants a born-again Christian as the bitch.
Fans should the Celtics kidnap their opponent's star player in order to guarantee their team the championship. Ladies and gentlemen, once again this week we are talking about White Men Can't Jump, the sequel, White Men Can't Jump 2, Jumpier.
Jumpier
on the Podzilla 1985 network. Hey, it's extras and epilogues. Once again, the theater is open once again this week, and we are following up last week's really fun White Men Can't Jump with this week's movie that was filmed, Celtic Pride.
It is definitely one of the movies of all time.
One of the all-time basketball films ever made. I can say that without hyperbole.
That's a fact.
My name is Shannon Young. I got a messed up back. I got a heating pad on it. I got a cup of coffee here because I was falling asleep before the show because I didn't sleep last night. Perfect time to finish watching Celtic Pride. And when you're sleepy, here with me, of course, this week, once again, Mr. Hunter Hendricks.
Hey, kids, did you hear that? My dream is dead. That's it. It's the only one I've got. It's the funniest line in the whole movie.
Are you sure? It was a storm. It was a cosmic gumbo of humor. That's what that we used to say on the set.
Gumbo.
On the court.
Said that on the set about it.
Yeah, it was a cosmic gumbo. So,
oh god.
There are a couple of surprising things about this film. Special shout out to Dalton, by the way. I'm a big fan of the show, I found out, and I appreciate that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We'll have to have him on here one of these days. We gotta pick a movie that he likes, and you know what we should do.
What's that?
We should do like Ready to Rumble.
Oh yeah,
and have Dalton come on.
Yeah, we
can
do that.
Yeah,
and honestly, that movie is bad enough. We could do it in Shitfuck September, if I think is what we were calling
it.
Right?
Shitfuck September.
It was like the worst of the worst. Like, I think that was September.
Yeah, we'll be rewatching Tokyo Gore Police for that month.
Did they make a sequel? I didn't know.
I think it was called I got nothing. There's a whole.
It was called The Engineer Who Couldn't Explode.
Who couldn't kill the bad guy. There's a whole list of those kind of J horror films, but that's a different show. This show is about basketball, and this movie was about basketball. And that, you know, that's something I can give the film. It did the homework. Yep. It was about basketball. Release. Absolutely. This is a Disney film. Did you know that?
It's Buena Vista Pictures.
Right.
So it's under the subsidiary. Disney umbrella.
Yeah.
It's their like adult label, basically. That doesn't sound right. Cause we're talking about movies. It's their, you know what I mean? It's not
a kid's
typical
film.
Disney fare. There you go.
Yeah. Although this movie could very easily be a kid's film. It's fairly tame.
It might have been better off had it been, honestly, now that I think about it. But maybe that's for the epilogues. We'll talk about that later.
Released April 19th, 1996. Terrible year. Written, directed by Tom DiCicerio.
I think it's Tom DiCicerio.
Tom DiCicerio. It sounds like you're drunk no matter how you say it.
He had, and I'm trying to remember the movie now, he was only doing this movie because he got fired from another movie.
Oh,
because
sweet.
They didn't like his directorial style.
I can't understand why.
It didn't work here either.
No.
Yeah.
And you gotta, and here's the really surprising fact. This is what's, kids out there, get ready. This is going to surprise you. Written by Judd Apatow and Colin Quinn.
Yeah. Colin Quinn of SNL fame.
Fantastic writers right there.
Absolutely. I don't know about anything else in terms of films that Colin Quinn has written. And I know there were people who kind of had their takes on whether or not he was good on Weekend Update and all his stand-up. But I always thought Colin Quinn was a good at the very least, a good stand-up hand, right?
Yeah.
And then Judd Apatow goes on to write some of the greatest comedies of the 2000s.
Some of the biggest hits,
40-Year-Old Virgin, Anchorman, This Is 40, all of that. Pineapple Express.
Yeah.
all of those movies are Knocked Up. That's the one I was trying to think of. This is all Judd Apatow.
Right.
Now, he does work with other people for those things, but
God.
I mean, he had a writing partner on this one, too.
Is it Judd Apatow? I feel like an ass.
I think it's Toe. I don't know.
Probably is. I think Apatow sounds sounds stupid.
I don't know. It doesn't matter. He also, I didn't know this until I was doing the research for the for this movie. He wrote another movie in 1996. Mm. He wrote The Cable Guy.
Which that is a very divisive film. I like The Cable Guy. Sure. I always liked it, you know? Yeah. This film, we'll get to that in a second. So,
but he had to fight to get credit on that, by the way. That was the trivia for that, was basically for Cable Guy, he evidently he rewrote a lot of the script. He didn't write it originally, but he did rewrites for Jim Carrey and for Ben Stiller, who directed that movie. And then he had to kind of fight the Writers Guild. He ultimately did not get a writing credit on it. So if you go looking for it, you're not going to see that he wrote The Cable Guy. He got a producer's credit. This one, he got a very definitive writing credit, and I bet he wishes it was the other way around.
He could have given it away. He could have just called up Colin Quinn and said, "You know what, buddy? You take this one. It's all you.
It's all you.
It's
man.
All you." And it's sad because you got a great cast. And admittedly, I'm joking. I think I'm going to be a little bit more kind to this movie than I thought I was going to be originally. Now, that's not saying much, but I'm going to be a little bit kinder. a great cast: Damon Wayans, who in '96. Right after In Living Color.
All over the place.
He did this. Yeah. He did Great White Hype. He did Blank Man not too long or before this. Damon Wayans was everywhere. Daniel Stern, another great actor, of course, from the Home Alone series. Dan Aykroyd, one of our absolute favorites. Ray Stantz from the Ghostbusters. Christopher McDonald. Love Christopher McDonald.
Shooter McGavin coaches the Utah Jazz in this movie. Yeah. I didn't expect it until I started writing. I'm like, who is he in this film? And he played like he does in everything. Christopher McDonald. He played himself as he does in every movie. And I didn't hate it.
Nope.
It's exactly what I wanted from him. I want him to be a little bit overly hyped. I want him to be angry about everything. I want him
always
to be
angry.
Cocky and not deserve anything that he gets or says.
Right. Standard white people.
Great.
Yeah. there's some fun cameos in here too. Daryl Hammond.
Yeah.
I mean, it wasn't much, but it was nice seeing Daryl Hammond.
Right. Who's the stand-up whose car has been stolen? The Porsche.
Dude, I don't know. I was trying to figure that out the entire time because I'm like, I know this guy. I've seen this guy. I've seen him
I didn't
before.
Look it up in the moment because I was watching the movie on my computer, and so it was like not as easy as it would be normally.
Also,
but I definitely saw him and went, that's a stand-up. Because Daryl Hammond, of course, was on SNL. He did some stand-up before that, too. Jeff Ross. It was Jeff Ross.
Jeff Ross. That makes a lot of sense,
Yeah, there were a lot of people who I think they pulled in that way. A lot of guys who were playing roles who were just friends of the guys who were running the movie. So
that's okay. So before we get too deep into the movie, that I think is what I think is the best compliment I can give this film. It felt like everybody was having a good time and they were doing something they wanted to do. So, you know, and there is something to be said about that. Even if a movie's not great, if the people in it don't look like they're miserable, like some of the movies we've criticized, you know, that they don't, they look like they absolutely don't want to be there. At least this one, you felt like they all wanted to be there and they were having a good time with, which we'll dive into the movie here in a few, 90 minute runtime. That's the sweet spot. That's right on the sweet spot. As we often
really
say,
is. Yeah, it could not be more directly on it. It is literally exactly 90 minutes long. So they knew what they were doing in terms of the classic 90s comedy setup.
It's very mid.
When it comes to
so
timing,
many ways.
I should say. Yes.
Budget versus box office. I also tried to look this up after I saw your note. I couldn't find it either. I have no idea what the budget is.
Yeah.
I'm assuming
nobody knows what this movie cost, which is blowing my mind.
If I were a guessing man, I would bet somewhere in the realm of 70 to 80 million, probably. Somehow.
It had to be kind of expensive, right? Because Damon Wayans is on fire at this time.
Right.
Dan Aykroyd is always going to cost you a little bit of money because he, at this point, is well past Ghostbusters and all of that.
And what a strange role for him.
Yeah,
he was so strange.
We'll talk about that, too. Daniel Stern is coming off of Home Alone's 1 and 2 at this point, and I forget he did something else in and around here. Was he like a Boy Scout leader in a movie? Is that what I'm thinking of?
He was. I don't remember the name of the film.
That was around that time too.
The weird part is you just unlocked a memory. I know what movie you're talking about. The only thing I remember from it is there's a part where they have to shoot a slingshot at someone. They don't have a slingshot, and the girl who's like probably 13 or 14. She goes, I got an idea, guys, don't look. And the next scene, they're using her bra as a slingshot. And I remember thinking, when I was younger, I remember thinking, like, that was weird.
Yeah,
that was weird to put that in there, right?
That movie's called Bushwhacked.
Bushwhacked.
That's the name of that movie.
Yeah.
Also, did you? Oh man, talking about this didn't unlock a memory. This just blew my mind. Did you know that he was the narrator on The Wonder Years?
I did. Yeah.
I had no idea.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
No clue he did that, and I don't remember him being a Rookie of the Year. But that's unrelated. Or
I don't remember Rookie of the Year.
He was in City Slickers, and I often forget he was in City Slickers. But
because when you think City Slickers, you always think what Billy Crystal and
Billy Crystal, yeah,
yeah, and other guy. I don't remember.
Yes,
Jack Palance.
Well, Daniel Stern. That's who you're thinking of. Oh yeah, yeah, Jack Palance. Is it Palance or Palance?
I don't know. I don't know.
It's twice tonight.
Maybe we're not good at this show like we thought we were. critical reception for this bad boy, 12% critical approval rating on Rotten Tomatoes, which I think might be the lowest movie we've reviewed, other than maybe Friday the 13th.
Critics go, maybe, maybe even I'd say probably. I would put it above maybe,
because even Tokyo Gore Police was like mid to high critical rating.
I'm gonna skim through here and see just what we've all done recently that would have maybe been lower, but
I'll keep going here while he's doing that. 12% critical approval rating on Rotten Tomatoes, Metacritic score of 34 out of 100, generally unfavorable. 2 out of 4 stars from Roger Ebert, who says it's a little too lumbering to take off as a comedy, but there is the germ of an idea here. Is that a gem of an idea? Is that germ?
Wow. Yeah, like there's a little speck of an idea that could have been something more, is what he's saying.
Especially in the scenes where the professional star ridicules two grown men for taking basketball games so seriously. And I agree with that. That, I think, was one of the better parts of the movie that they didn't really follow up on at all, was him taking them to task for being so obsessed with other people. You know, he's the part, I thought it was a good part where they've kidnapped him. He's sitting in the room with Dan Aykroyd. He's looking around at all the trophies and he's like, you know, do you think they have your trophy on their wall? It's a great criticism of the obsessive fan behavior that we see in sports so much. Maybe nowhere worse, as you and I both know, than in maybe professional wrestling, where the tribalism is disgusting.
Real bad.
I can't count in regular sports how many times I've heard people say our team won or we won. And it's like, what'd you do to contribute?
You didn't do it. Bought the jersey. All you're really a fan of is colors and names, colors of teams and logos.
Because
if one guy went to another team, you're not going to follow him.
No,
that's not how that works. So I skimmed through all of them, actually, because we got them all in the one document there. The next, you were right, the next lowest movie we reviewed was Friday the 13th, Part 4. This was a 12% approval rating as far as critics go. Friday the 13th was a 24.
That's ridiculous.
Twice as much.
I would watch this movie 5 times a week over Friday the 13th, the final chapter. No offense to Tanner.
Not to jump too far ahead of the reviewing and all that. I have no desire to watch this movie again. I also would watch this movie every day of the week before I watch that movie again. I think in general I do agree with it. It's every time, man. Roger Ebert is spot on. He's right down the middle, and he says there are some things about it that are good, but
it's too average.
It just never really. It never really takes off. It just never really takes off and does anything with all the things that it introduces. So.
This is one of those movies, and there's a whole bunch of them, where there are comedies that are perfect. Honestly, it's perfectly fine. There's nothing wrong with this movie. I'm going to say it now. There's nothing wrong with this film. It's not poorly acted. It's not poorly written. It's not poorly directed by any standard. It's just so forgettable. There are parts. But my biggest criticism of it is it's just very forgettable. There's nothing about it that stands out. I don't want to say by the numbers, but it's so uninteresting.
It's a 90-minute sitcom plot.
Yeah.
It's a 90-minute idea that could easily have been done in 22 minutes. That to me is the most egregious part of it.
If you're wondering what the hell is this movie about, because we know you've never seen it and you're never going to watch it, so we'll just tell you. So Dan Aykroyd and Daniel Stern are two huge Celtic fans. The Celtics are playing the Utah Jazz in the is it the playoffs or the championships? Finals. It's the finals. Okay.
The finals. It's the NBA finals. Yep.
And their star player, who's played by Damon Wayans, they end up getting him super drunk and kidnapping him with the idea that they will keep him from playing in the final game, therefore securing the Celtics a victory. Hijinks ensue. That's the basic setup of the movie. And it's not a bad, again, it's not a, I'm serious, man. It's not a bad setup. I don't hate this. I don't hate this movie. I don't hate it,
no.
But I didn't like it. And I watched this movie years ago. I watched this when it first came out, back when we used to have satellite and there was a whole list of like rental stations on the satellite. This is where I saw a lot of the all time movies of the era. This, you know, just a smorgasbord of average films like Broken Arrow, like five different Steven Seagal films.
I have a distinct memory of when we first got access to what you're talking about. It was when we got our like mini dish satellite, whatever, those little ones. And for me, it wasn't the rental channels. It was when you got like a free trial to HBO. Yeah. That always just happened to be around the time that HBO was showing stuff like
True Lies,
the 98 Spawn movie.
Yeah.
Spice World, like the Spice World movie was on there a lot.
True Lies was on there all the time. That's a good movie.
So forgettable.
And this, I don't know what it was. I had an addiction to, I said it the other day, I had an addiction to banality. And for some reason, I rented it all the time. And I thought Celtic Pride would be good because I really love Dan Aykroyd. I love Daniel Stern. I was a huge fan of Damon Wayans at the time because I was a big In Living Color fan. And I thought, okay, let's do this. And I remember renting it and watching it. And then immediately it was like K and J were there flashy thinging me because I forgot it existed the moment it turned off.
And what was that about?
What the hell was it? Oh, what was his name? Damon?
Dominion
Wayans. And I didn't think about this film. I never thought about this film again until we said we were going to cover basketball movies. And once we were talking about all these great films, in my head, I thought, what's the worst basketball film you've ever seen? Because God knows if Hunter's bringing the good ones, you've got to contribute the bad ones.
And I only recommended White Men Can't Jump because I hadn't seen it, but I had heard it was good. And come to find out, it ended up being my favorite thing that we've done so far for this month. It's only two, of course, but
this was not
a movie that I admittedly. Last week was a movie that I said not only would I watch again, I kind of want to watch again. I gave it two thumbs up. I really enjoyed it. This was, you're correct. This was not that.
No.
I didn't hate it. I didn't hate it. I really did not hate this movie.
No.
But I also didn't really like it. And the thing that got me the most about it, and I think the thing that's going to push me to my ultimate rating, is that this is a comedy that did not make me laugh.
I never laughed once.
Never.
I was thinking that too. I never laughed.
So I watched this movie on my computer because, of course, we had to do some things to get it watched.
Yeah.
And Sarah was asleep when I was watching it. She had something else going on the TV. She woke up while it was maybe like it was about half over, I think.
Right.
Went in the kitchen to do some stuff, and she was in the midst of making supper while I was watching it. And I was like, "Hey, do you need any help?" No, I got it. So I throw my headphones back in. So I'm watching it, noise canceling and all that. And I get done and I close it up. I go in there, we sit down, we're eating, and she goes, "What movie were you watching?" I'm like, "Oh, I'm explaining what it was." And she goes, "So I'm guessing it wasn't very good." And I said, "Why?" And she goes, "Well, those are all very funny people, and you didn't laugh one time."
I just assumed. I just assumed when you sat down and she said, "What did you watch?" You went, "I don't remember.
I don't know. Hang on, let me go Google it again.
Did I watch something just now?" Yeah. to me, this movie really is like the definition of average. It's just, it's average. There's nothing special about it. I also didn't laugh. Now, that's not to say that all comedies need to have me chuckling in the street. There are some things that I watch, like King of the Hill. I love King of the Hill. It's not often that King of the Hill makes me laugh out loud, but I'm enjoying my time so much while watching it. On the inside, I feel a joy. This movie didn't give me that. This movie was like watching, it was like hanging out with friends you haven't seen for a while, and you're kind of just sitting around talking, and it's pleasant, but you know you want it to be over. You know what I mean? It's that friend that you're like, "Oh, it's good to see you. You're talking and everything's going fine." But in your head, like, "I got things to do, man. I need you to bail."
You're looking at the clock.
Right. That's what this movie was to me.
Yeah.
Which is sad because it is such a talented group of people. One of the first things, so when the movie starts and he's giving his speech to the kids, I haven't seen this movie in probably 20 years. And as soon as he says it, well, not even 20 years, God, almost 30 years, Jesus Christ. Mm-hmm. I haven't seen this movie in almost 30 years. And oh my God. And as soon as he's talking, I'm like, okay, he's talking to kids, isn't he? And he was. And I'm like, okay, the humor is that he's being way too into it. And these are children. And then all of the children. And then
nothing comes of that.
Well, what comes is a very creepy part where all the children, go back and watch it. All the children say, can we play on the trampoline, Mr. Whatever?
Or at the same time. Yeah.
And none of their lips move. Did you notice that?
No, they ADR'd the whole thing.
They ADR'd.
That's messed up.
There was a few kids.
There were a couple of times they did that with Aykroyd too. So when he goes to make the half court shot, you can tell that like it does not match up what he's saying and what his mouth is doing.
So you opened up the box. Let's talk about it. I don't understand what the hell was Dan Aykroyd doing here. What are you doing, man?
Let's talk about that whole scenario. I know we're jumping way ahead in the movie, but so the guys are cheering on the Jazz because they don't want to go to jail. Suddenly they do the half court thing, the you know, halftime, hey, somebody makes a shot from half court, they win a bunch of money. Well, of course it's one of the two guys. This is your dream, man. You're going to get to go out on the parquet floor before it's gone. Like this, you know, the Boston Garden's going to be gone. We'll never get to do this again. He goes out, he does his like weird, he kept saying, I'm not going to be able to do it. He does this weird little like samba dance and kind of like bowls it. And then in the worst CG of 1996, the ball manages to go through the hoop. And they win $100,000. The only reason he does it, by the way, in a Jazz jersey is because his buddy Daniel Stern's character tells him we might need it for bail money. We might need it for jail when we go to jail. And he makes it, and they win this money. This is never once spoken about again.
Never.
It never comes back. No. There is quite literally no reason for that scene to be.
It was completely
nothing.
Completely pointless. If
it was there, so Dan Aykroyd could do the little dance before he shot the ball.
He also
would have made more sense for it to be Daniel Stern's character. He's the former basketball player. He's the one who might have a shot at it. It would have made more sense if they somehow used that at the end for their little, you know, the second go around kidnapping plot. But none of it made any sense. It would have made sense if they would have said in the denouement, like in the end of the movie, that Aykroyd's character gets together with the woman,
the hot dog who was girl,
the hot dog, and he like owns his own plumbing business now, and he's running.
Never
the show
spoken about.
And he like invested in it. Nothing Look, happens with that scene.
I know we're skipping to the end, but you brought it up. I got to talk about it. The whole ending was pointless because there's a subplot of Daniel Stern and his wife and how she's leaving him again because he's obsessed with sports. And part of this was supposed to be his. And we've talked about the growth of a character over the film. His growth
He
doesn't grow at all. None of them do.
He doesn't grow at all or change in any way. And even without the ending, that whole thing of him like going back and trying to be a good parent or whatever, he's not. His kid has to tell him what's going on. Yeah. I never understood why this woman was invested in this guy in the first place and then wanted him back, other than the movie needed it to happen.
Well, that's the thing. So after they succeed, and we'll talk about the ending in a little bit, but after they succeed, they don't go to jail. He realizes, you know, there's more to life than cheering on the Celtics. You think there would be a scene where he reunites with his wife and son, tells her he loves her, tells his kid, hey, let's go throw the ball around or something, and none of that happens. It literally goes from the court where they're joking with Damon Wayans to them kidnapping Deion Sanders. There's a little bit of exposition at the end, but instead of showing us what happened, they just throw in a line or two about him and his wife now, and like, what a terrible ending. Like, what a poorly written ending.
If you made that movie today, what would happen is all the things we just talked about would be the end of the actual movie. There would be some sort of little reunification with Lewis, with Damon Wayans' character.
Yeah.
There would be some funny little bit about how he's going to destroy him, da-da-da-da-da. And then the post-credits scene would be the two of them sneaking in, somehow explaining how the money they want is allowing them to do this. And, you know, the whole joke, because the whole thing exists for the joke of him saying, I promised I would never interfere in the NBA Finals again. But it's NFL season.
Oh, man.
And here we are. Right.
Uh-huh.
There would be a little post-credits joke about that, and it would be to set up a sequel. It would be because they thought it was good enough to set up a sequel. This movie was never getting a sequel.
It was never going to get a sequel. No.
It was never going to happen.
And nor should it. And going back to Dan Aykroyd, throughout the film, it's established that Dan Aykroyd is a loser, that he only exists because his friend allows him. There's weird scenes where he's in, like, almost lingerie, and Daniel Stern is slapping his ass because he says he owns him. There's parts where he's plugging his ear and singing because it helps the Celtics. Like, there's all these weird things with him, and you think it's building up to his big moment of him.
Pay off.
And it's just the half court shot, which goes nowhere and gives him nothing. Yeah. He has nothing by the end of the film. No. Nothing is accomplished.
He wins a bunch of money that is never once addressed again, and then he goes to try to kidnap Deion Sanders because apparently they care about football now.
Why would you not at least put a little scene in there, like you said, where maybe he has his own commercial for his own company and Damon Wayans' character is in it? Like,
right.
Show something
that,
like that.
And that would be a great callback to the scene. One of the only scenes I really did enjoy, and like you said, the movie does get interesting, or at least worth like kind of watching.
The idea is interesting.
When they have him kidnapped.
Yes.
And he's like, you know, I'll let you go right now if I flip through all these channels and there's no commercial with you in it. All right, I'm going to win this right now. And the trash talk that they're doing, that reminded me of like them trying to emulate White Man Can't Jump. Yeah. Because he's talking so much trash as they're skimming through of like, all right, here I'm going. I'm getting out, baby. Keep flipping. So speed those channels up a little bit. And then, of course, they do run into a commercial with him. That would have been great. Do a tight shot on a TV of somebody flipping through commercials, and then you see Lewis, and he's doing this commercial, but it turns out it's for the plumbing business.
Right. Because they become friends.
They become friends. There's some version of that. Because, again, they did make him the best version of him he could be, basically.
Right. And he saved him in the end.
That's another thing too. I mean, there's so many. It's they're lacking. Not plot holes, but there's so many little like twists and turns and introductions, and you can see actually the Roger Ebert using the phrase like, you know, there's a germ of a good idea here. You can also see the germ of what Judd Apatow is going to be. You can see the germ of his style of writing, where there's these little tiny elements that actually do kind of try to add up to something. And in this movie, they never get there. But they do that stuff in Anchorman, even when it's an extremely over-the-top movie, right? There's all those little build-ups of somebody mentioning somebody's mother or you know, what's going to happen when one of them takes over the anchor position. They do the same thing in Knocked Up, where they reference things that come back later, the baby books and all that. He was trying to get to that level, but this was not it.
This was not the movie for it.
No. This was the test run, and he didn't quite get there.
Yeah, you had a great cast, you had a great writer, and it just came out as very average. I really don't know what else to say about it.
There's not much to say. I mean, that's what happens in the movie. What little bit I looked about this movie online, I did see where people were talking about it that they didn't like the ending. And I think they don't necessarily mean the Deion Sanders bit. They mean the back half, you know, the last 30 minutes of the movie where it's about, okay, well, you got to root for me now. Or if you don't, I'm going to, you know, if I lose, I'm going to go to jail. I think people were hoping this was more of a kidnapping movie.
That's how they played it off. Yeah, that's how they played it off, is that it's all about the kidnapping, but the kidnapping is a small part of it. And then there's a lot before it, and then there's a lot after it. The kidnapping seems to be over way too soon. I mean, to the point that Damon Wayans literally just walks away. He walks away from the kidnapping. He's like, all right, later, guys.
And by the way, I better see you at the game. Wear some purple, because if I don't win, you're going to jail. Like, they try to set up a whole third act plot that doesn't go with the rest of the movie. It doesn't jive with the rest of it. I'm sorry, real quick, because it just dawned on me now that I'm thinking about it. When he does arrive at the game, and Christopher McDonald's character, the coach, just berates the shit, are we supposed to feel sorry for Lewis at this point?
Right.
Like, a couple of different times they allude – this is something I never understood. A couple of different times they allude to him having this, like, you know, oh, man, I don't want to watch those commercials of me, or, like, you know, you don't know what it's like to do what I do. When Daniel Stern's character says to him, like, you don't really care about this stuff. Like, you don't care about winning. All you care about is the money. He's like, hey, shut up, man. Like, it's the first time he gets serious. And I kept thinking, like, oh, okay.
It's going somewhere.
The character's deeper than what we're getting. Him just being an arrogant asshole. It's he feels insecure. He doesn't feel like he's good enough. Nope. It turns out all he had to do was learn to pass the ball, and everything's fine.
And then the game was won.
No story there.
No.
There's nothing there.
I also
there are so many little things that are just set up, and I went, okay, where is this going? Nowhere. Nothing will come of this.
There's also a part at the end when he does get to the game, because they've been wondering the whole time, where is he? Where's Lewis?
Right.
So he shows up. And Christopher McDonald's character is berating him, and he keeps saying, coach, I can explain. What were you going to explain if he gave you the chance?
Right. What were you going to tell them?
Because that's going
to then get those guys going to jail.
Right.
Like, that was the whole point. If you have them there, you're holding them kind of ransom. You're blackmailing them. If you tell the coach what happened, he's before going to tell the
game.
Police.
Yeah, before the game. So I didn't understand that. Don't. His whole, coach, I can explain. Coach, just let me explain. Oh, I would, if I was Christopher McDonald, I would have said, okay, explain.
Right.
Let me know.
And also, I mean, just to double back to the beginning of that scenario, why is he late? The guys let him go before he did. They let him go. He walked away with the gun, like, except for the fact that he probably had to scrounge up some money and get a ride somewhere because he didn't have a cell phone. I don't understand why he was late. None of that made any sense to me.
No,
those guys got up off a basketball court where they were being held at gunpoint, somehow made it back to where they came from, got their hands on a bunch of Utah Jazz merchandise.
Yeah.
And then made their way to their seats and all that before he ever shows up. It made no sense to me. I could not understand why he was late at all.
I did. I did like the part where he's running for his life and the cab stops and he gets in. He's like, you know, hey, I need some help. And the guy goes, hey, you're Lewis. He's like, yeah, I need some help. And he's just like, get out of my cab. What? He's like, what are you talking? This is an emergency.
What you did to my Celtics.
Yeah. Because that's again.
Yeah, it's a funny beat.
To me, this movie is the most interesting when it's showing the obsession with sports that some fans have, especially certain markets.
That's the only
markets.
Commentary it's really got.
That's the only commentary it's got, because there's no commentary for Daniel Stern's character of, he used to be a ball player and now he's looking for redemption. No, he's not. He never gets it. He never gets if he had beaten
Lewis, he take the shot? That little one-on-one game. What was the point of any of that shit other than to eventually get the gun in Lewis's hand?
Right. If he had won that,
made no sense to me.
There was no part where Daniel Stern's character won. All he did was he escaped fate. That's it. That's not really a victory. You know?
And managed to I don't even like saying he repaired his relationship, because did he?
Well, that's what I'm saying.
The only bit we get of that is he says when they're going into Deion Sanders' apartment, like, Gloria actually likes me right now. Oh, good. What a win for you. Your wife enjoys your presence.
The ending should have been him coming home, hugging her, and apologizing and saying, I was an idiot and I love you. And then that end, the stinger at the end would have been more fun.
Yes.
But there was nothing.
I just realized This is not an epilogue thing. This is just us rewriting the movie as it is to make it better. The commercial that Lewis Scott should have cut for the plumbing business, for Dan Aykroyd's character's plumbing business, should have been something that was on the TV while the rest of the family was now sitting around watching basketball.
Watching TV, yeah.
Yes, and that would have been the thing, is finally, like, they've come together on something, or even better, have it be that, like, it turns out the wife watched basketball for the sake of her husband because she did realize she loved him, she wanted him to be better, but the thing that he's frustrated now with, because you got to throw that little bit of comedic beat in at the end, is that she doesn't like basketball at all. She likes, like, cricket or some random shit, and it's the only thing she can get into, so he's got to, like, all right, fine, fuck it, it's sports, like, I got to get into something. Because remember, they watch, like, log rolling and, like lumberjack shit.
Oh, God.
Like, bring that back. Make it a thing where, like, it turns out that's the only thing that she's really into, and, like, he's like, why the hell is she so into this? And the kid's like, I can't deal with this. He just gets up and leaves the room. That would be funny.
I would have had, in the end, they're watching, they're at home. This is after they've, so at the game, she runs out on the court after the game and hugs him and, like, I'm sorry, they do the I love yous and all that. You skip time, jump ahead. They're all watching TV. He grabs a beer. He comes to sit next to her. The son's in there too. She puts on a basketball game and says, the Celtics are playing. Daniel Stern's character says, no, I think I've had enough basketball, and turns the channel. And then the channel goes to the commercial with Lewis, which at which point he just kind of laughs and it fade to black. And then you do the credits, and then you do the stinger at the end where they kidnap Deion Sanders. Hunter and I have never written a Hollywood film.
Never. I'm going to marry the two ideas. Instead of fading to black after the commercial, over the credits, we see, like, the film keeps playing in the background instead of that. And that's where it turns out that they're talking about what they're going to watch. And he's like, lumberjack, like, log rolling, there's no way you're going to win. She's like, no, hang on, go back. That was, what is that again? And he's like, yeah, I mean, they're cutting into logs. And, like, you know, me and Jim used to watch it. No. This is good.
This interests me. They're big.
It's like, really?
Yeah.
And the kid's like, I can't deal with this. He just gets up and leaves. That's funny. Do that over the credits. Just let that run. I
don't understand. And Judd Apatow wrote Judd this, Apatow. And Colin Quinn wrote this.
I think that this was a trial run. I'm curious now what Judd Apatow's first movie was.
Are you sure this was Judd Apatow and not Jed Apatow?
Jed,
like his cousin,
his long lost brother,
who's never actually seen a comedy. He's right. Just.
What has he written? Okay, he has 47 writing credits. Yeah. I want to see exclusively what he has
in that time period. Written.
Let's get rid of everything else. He's 47 writing credits. Okay. They we'll go to as you. Recently as right now. Oh, they're pretty far back. He wrote for the Grammys back in the early 90s and all that. But I'm not seeing any. He started writing on SNL for a cut. He wrote for two episodes between 90 and 95. He wrote Heavyweights, and I think that was his first big movie in 95. And then, after that, Christ. It goes from two episodes of The Critic, The Ben Stiller Show, something called The TV Wheel, and then Celtic Pride.
Well, Hunter, I'm
so this was his first movie that he wrote.
I'm shocked you didn't mention that he wrote three Tom Arnold specials.
Oh, geez. Yeah, I didn't see there were three of them. I now see that there's a one, two, and three.
Three of them.
Three. Yeah, because he wrote for some TV movies and all that. And I guess after this, he goes back to
Freaks and Geeks
is not that long. Yeah, there we go. Right. There's Freaks and Geeks. Again, TV, he's writing, you know, Undeclared and other random. He apparently writes for award shows a lot. But then The 40-Year-Old Virgin is the next big thing that he writes. Also, I was mistaken.
Mega hit.
Anchorman is not him. I don't remember who wrote Anchorman, but I think he had a producing credit on that.
But he did. He wrote 40-Year-Old Virgin. He wrote Fun with Dick and Jane with Jim Carrey. Knocked
Walk
Up.
Hard.
Walk
was
Hard.
Him. I didn't realize that was him. I had no idea that was him.
Oh, well, you know what? Okay. It's making a little bit more sense now because he also wrote You Don't Mess with the Zohan. It's starting to make a little bit more sense here.
That's unfortunate.
Yeah.
But again, his first full movie that he writes, not TV movie, like literal theatrical movie, is Celtic Pride. And again, I think he was just working out the kinks. I think this was his first run, and people went, yeah, good enough. We'll give it a shot.
Well,
Apatow now doesn't write this movie. He writes a different version of this movie.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. But again, like, I don't think anything about this film is particularly offensive or anything like that. It's just,
no,
it's just boring. It's just boring.
Yeah, it's a comedy with very little comedy. I shouldn't say no comedy because there are like some I never, ever laughed.
Right.
But like you said, at no point in time was it audible. Like it got a grin out of me and that's it. Hey kids, my dream is dead. Like I said it to you as I was watching it. Daniel Stern is the best actor in the movie for at least the first half of it.
Yeah, he's very entertaining.
He's the only person that I want to go and watch. Damon Wayans is so stilted until after the kidnapping that I thought he was in another movie. I had no idea what I was watching.
I found Anna another Aykroyd film.
Is so goofy and over the top that it just is too much.
I didn't understand Dan Aykroyd in this movie at all. I really either. Didn't.
It's very weird. It's very weird.
I found another film that I also ordered on that pay-per-view thing that starred Damon Wayans that also I was incredibly disappointed in and I hated, and it's the same thing. Damon Wayans took any role at any point at this point. Bulletproof with Adam Sandler.
Not a great film.
The only thing I remember about that film is Adam Sandler saying, you know how I can tell this porn was in the 70s, you know, because that guy's like Bush is an afro. And I'm like, all right, look, hot take. I'll say it here. I don't like Adam Sandler. There are times I do, and there are times I go, why is he funny? Anyway, not the show for it. I know.
No, it's not. I was going to start throwing intakes there. And my long and short on Adam Sandler is there are a couple of his early movies I like. Then I get real bored with him for a long time. And then I think he's actually a pretty good dramatic actor.
He comes back as a better dramatic actor than as a comedic actor. Because before we get hate mail, I love Billy Madison. I loved Happy Gilmore. And then that's it.
Those are the two.
I tolerated Waterboy. I tolerated Little Nicky.
Right, yeah,
and then it just goes
downhill from there. Uncut Gems was an incredible movie.
Great movie.
It's not something I ever want to watch again, but it was great, and he was very good in it.
Drunk Love was a fantastic film.
I always heard that's good. I've never seen it, but it was one of those things that people didn't know what they were getting because it was his first real attempt at that, and people went in for a wacky, zany Adam Sandler comedy.
And it was not that. It was not that, yeah.
No, sir.
No, sir. So you can tell how much we enjoyed this film by the fact we keep going back to other things. Let's get to the review. I want to get to the point where I'm doing this show and I have the time that I can put like little effects into it. So when I say let's get to the review, there's like a whoosh noise or something. I guess I got it. All right, here we go. Like, all right, enough talk about that. Let's get to the review.
Hey, enjoying your shrimp?
All right, so so of course on the show we do the 5-point review system. Two thumbs up means you loved it. Don't worry, we're not going to use that one. One thumb up means you liked it. One up, one down means you're neutral to it. One thumbs down means you didn't like it. Two thumbs down means you hated it. Very few films on this show have ever gotten two thumbs down. Even in movies that some of us truly didn't like, it only earned a one thumb down just because of the value and the idea that, yes, this film has some merit. Other films like Breen have no merit beyond the chuckles of the lulls.
Right.
So...
Yeah, I think I've only two thumbs down three movies, if I remember correctly. Dog Soldiers, which we did. Friday Fable the 13th. Findings, of course, because and Friday. I think I was the only one who said that of Friday the 13th, just because it held no value.
You had no attachment to it, right?
Nope. But Fable Findings is a good epitome of like, did I have a good time watching it? Yeah, to some degree. Would I ever watch it again, or is it worth anything? No.
Are you gonna watch the new one when we get a chance? Yes.
Cade, the Tortured Crossing. Tiger fight. Of course.
That has an actual effect artist. So I pretty much said everything I can say about this film. I didn't hate it. There were parts I enjoyed. I enjoyed some of the acting. I enjoyed some of the criticism of hardcore fans. There was a lot that I really did like. The problem is it was just wrapped up in such a bland package. This to me feels like someone that's starting a career and they really haven't found their voice yet. And they're writing stuff that isn't bad. It just isn't particularly interesting. And I myself, I've seen my own writing like that. In fact, I think if you go back to Podzilla when we started, especially after the first show was a little bit different because we were talking about wrestling. That was our element. Right. But you know, go back to the shows after that. I think the second show I ever did was on Tara Reid's weight issues and like stuff like that. I had no business talking about that, but I wanted to talk about something, and I hadn't found my voice yet, and the show hadn't found its voice yet. And that's what I think this movie is. This is a writer that hasn't figured out how he wants to write films, and he's learning things, but it doesn't mean the movie is bad. I don't think this film is bad. I just don't think it's particularly interesting. Is it worth a watch? If you're a fan of these people, like these actors, or you want to see someone early in their career, yes, I think it is worth watching. If you're a sports fan, maybe you'll get more enjoyment out of it than I did. But for me, this is as bland but likable as a movie can get. Like, there was no point that I... Because before I watched it, I only watched bits and pieces of it. And I remember just, oh my God, this is the worst thing. Once I sat down and watched the whole thing again... It was almost like a comfort movie in the sense that there was nothing particularly offensive. There was no gross out like toilet humor. There was no incredible foul language or objectification of women for the most part. There was like one line about him and an actress in a movie, but yeah, that's whatever. There was nothing about this film that read like, oh, it's trying to be edgelord. Oh, it's trying to chase trends. It's trying to be that gross out humor. Nothing like that. This felt like its own thing. I wasn't offended by it. I enjoy the actors. Some of it, it's so hard to talk about this film because it's, I could easily tell you it's terrible or it's good all in the same sentence for the same reasons. But the point is, and I know this is probably the most confusing review I've ever given. I don't think this film's without merit. I think it has some enjoyment to it, but it's not exciting. It's not particularly funny, but it's not bad. I am going to give, to me, this is the perfect example of one up, one down for me. I am completely neutral to this film. I have no attachment to it, but I also didn't hate it. I didn't dislike it. I didn't think it was bad. I will forget about this film the moment we post this review and move on to the next one. So one up, one down for me. This is the example of one up and one down as far as I'm concerned. So that's where I'm at. What about you?
I'm going to... I had a tough time deciding this because I've been thinking about this since I finished it a couple hours ago. And initially, I also was going to give it one down. I'm actually going to go one down.
I think that's fair.
And the reason for that is a lot of the stuff that we've elucidated here. I absolutely did not hate this movie, mostly because I won't think about this movie 20 minutes after we stop talking.
Right.
It will evaporate like vapor from my mind, and yes. I will forget everything that I saw. I already don't remember much in the way of like the visuals. I just remember the story beats. The reason I'm going a little more dislike than like is, again, it's a comedy with very little comedy. With not much to speak of. I definitely didn't laugh out loud. There were very few times that I even felt like I was gonna, you know, chuckle at it. It's not that it's not that it's like offensive to me in any way. It's not that I'm taking that route. It's just that it sort of promises one thing by being a certain kind of movie, and then it isn't that. And so I watched the entire movie going, okay, but now we're gonna do this, right? And it's weird. This movie is somehow at the same time very paint by numbers,
yeah.
Right? It's a 90-minute comedy from the 90s that plays like an extended episode of a sitcom. But at the same time, I also have no idea what's going to happen next, because the things that happen often don't make a lot of sense. Like, the way that the kidnapping plays out was the most interesting part, because there were a few times there where I thought, oh, okay, here's what's going to happen. Daniel Stern's character's wife and the son come in to find this man kidnapped, and no one ever manages to catch these guys as a result of that. Like, yeah. She says, I'm going to go call the cops. They sit around. They even have a line where they're like, we should probably get out of here. You know, she might actually do that. We'll just drive around for a long time in this van that I own that will not be hard to find. Yeah. You know, it's only when the cop does see it and is like, oh, I see what's going on here, but I really want my team to win, so I'm going to look the other way, that we get any kind of resolution to that. But there are so many other things where it just feels like, I don't know why this is in the movie. Again, the $100,000 half court shot, that's a lot of fucking money. We're not going to talk about that again. Nothing's going to come of that.
The only thing I could figure, and they just explained it poorly, is that they cared more about the Celtics winning than money, even. That's how much it meant to them. But that was poorly conveyed if that's what they wanted to do.
Right after that scene, they're in the bathroom, and that's when they're talking about, like, well, I guess, you know, prison won't be so bad after all, you know, because they think they're going to lose. And I'm like, you just went from this incredible moment where you won all this money. Also, when he goes out on the court, there's barely a hint of any booing because he's wearing a Jazz jersey.
Like, everybody knows
him. He doesn't
try
to explain himself.
Yeah.
Right. He doesn't try to explain himself to the basketball legend who's right there in front of him. Oh. I don't know, man.
I do want to mention, that's one part that I thought was really well done. Not that part specifically, but the whole ending when they're like, they're criticizing Daryl Hammond's character for cursing them. They're switching seats around. That is shit that fans really do. Like, they have these superstitions. That was legit. That was, I thought, pretty smart. And the rest of it wasn't. So.
Yeah, I did like, again, the most that this movie had to say about anything was when it was trying to provide some commentary on super hardcore fans,
yes,
coming from a guy who is in the game, who knows what it's like. And I really thought that's where the story was going, that he was going to say, like, guys, I don't think you get it. Like, even though I'm pissed at you right now because you've put me in this position, like, I'm trying to show you that you're kind of wasting your lives here. Like, you're living vicariously through other people, and this has got to stop and all that. I really started to enjoy some of the movie there in the middle, when Damon Wayans' character actually got a chance to do some things. Kind of
when he became an actor.
Yeah, he got to be himself. But dude, before that, he's just a wooden plank.
Yeah.
And the dialogue is really stilted, and it doesn't feel like the same movie. It feels like two or three different movies grafted together all at the same time.
And he never struck me as a basketball player.
No. Yeah. You talked about that briefly, about the, you know, Wesley Snipes last week, and even Woody Harrelson convinced me, because they worked with a real coach, that like, these guys could really go out there and play basketball.
Right.
No part of me watched Damon Wayans play and was like, oh man, what a badass. He's so good. He's supposed to be this Michael Jordan type player, but he's also got like a Dennis Rodman attitude. And
it's the same thing in Great White Hype, where they portray him as James the Grim Reaper Roper. He's supposed to be the most dangerous boxer in the world, but you never believe it because it's Damon Wayans.
No, it doesn't look like it. Yeah, no. Exactly. Yeah, it was enough of a disappointment for me to tilt it one down, that I really thought, like, I honestly, going into this movie, knowing what I knew about it, I'd never seen it before tonight, I thought I was going to be neutral. I kind of thought, this is, from what I've gathered about it from the research and from what I've talked to you about it before I'd seen it, I thought this will probably be a movie that'll be right up and down the middle for me. That was As I recall, that's what I said about Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, was that the nostalgia wasn't enough to overcome what I thought was a pretty middling script. For me, that's the epitome of a middling movie. It's right down the center of just, you know, I kind of forget about it. I don't remember much of what's happening. It's fine for a nostalgic factor, but it doesn't really do anything for me as a movie. This didn't have enough of those good things to rest its laurels on. Again, like Roger Ebert said, it never really takes off. Right. It keeps trying to do some things, and then it switches gears just before it manages to get enough speed to make that gear switch interesting. So, right. Yeah, it's a disappointment for me, and I'm going one down. I didn't hate it. I wouldn't recommend it either, though. I know you said, you know, if you're a fan of these people, it might be worth watching. Maybe. But frankly, if you're a fan of these people, find better much movies better. That they're in.
If you're at home and it's like it's Sunday, 4 o'clock, nothing's going on. You're flipping through the movie channels, and this movie pops up on like Stars West. Sure, grab a drink, sit back, and chill.
And it's 2002. And it's been out for about 6 years at this point.
I'll give it a try.
Whatever. And someone comes in and goes, "Hey, you enjoying your Celtic Pride?" And you go, "I don't know."
Hunter, I got a new segment on the show I'd like to introduce.
Yeah, yes, please.
We call it the best and the worst, where we talk about the best actor and the worst actor from the film. I think best actor for this movie would have to go to Daniel Stern. I don't mean he's the best actor in like of the group, but in this film, we're judging it based on itself. Yeah, best performance.
Best and worst performance.
Best and worst performance. Yeah, Daniel Stern, I think, takes best. Even though I didn't find his character particularly funny or anything like that, I felt like he was trying. Like he put more soul into this character than it probably should have had. He's the only character I thought that had character. So
right. Ostensibly, he is the protagonist. He is the main character of the story.
Right.
So,
and then worst performance to me, even though I thought Damon Wayans was very average in a lot of it, I'm just going to give it to Dan Aykroyd for just, why are you here? What a weird film. And like, what are you doing, man? It didn't feel like Dan Aykroyd. Nice. It felt like it could have been anybody.
It could have been anyone. It could have been any like over actor from that era. Also, no matter how hard Dan Aykroyd tries to do a Boston accent, he's still from Canada.
Yeah.
He's still from fucking Canada. When
I see a film like this, I think, you know what would have been that role was written for someone like Artie Lang or you know what I mean?
Yes.
That's the kind of guy that I imagine that role. Not fucking, Dan fucking Jeff Aykroyd. Ross
probably would have been fine.
Yeah.
Let's let Jeff Ross do it. He was already in the movie.
Yeah, it's pretty.
Yeah,
him
I think
there.
That would have been more entertaining. You get a guy like Stern, who is a seasoned actor at that point, who can carry a comedy. He, you know, formerly he was kind of the sidekick with Joe Pesci in Home Alone. Now he can kind of carry the comedy load. And then, like you said, you have a stand-up or somebody who's a good solid hand working right along beside him. Dan Aykroyd just didn't fit in this movie. It is awfully nice, though, of you to give Larry Bird a pass, because Larry Bird was very bad as an actor.
Okay, so truth time. Like, I'm not kidding. I have been watching, I don't know when it started popping up in my YouTube feed, I have been watching so many videos about Larry Bird lately, and because when I was a kid, I always thought Larry Bird was terrible. It was like, you remember they had Jordan versus Bird and stuff like that, and if any basketball fans are listening right now, you're gonna be happy me saying this. I always thought Larry Bird was like, he was an all-time great player, but he was awfully boring. No, it's the exact opposite. Larry Bird, listening to all of these other players talk about Larry Bird, like Barkley and Jordan and guys like that, they will tell you nobody was scarier on the court than Larry Bird. He could do everything. Yes. And not only that, but apparently he was the most trash-talkingest player in the NBA. One of my favorites is I don't remember who he was playing. There was two or three of the guys telling the same story. And Isaiah Thomas, I think, was one of them. But they're playing, the Celtics are playing somebody, and I think it's maybe the Pacers, I'm not 100% sure, but they have a white guy guarding Larry Bird, and he looks over at the coach and the other black players, he's like, "This is insulting. You're not going to put a black guy on me? You're going to have this guy guard me?" Like, it was, they're cracking up talking about how Larry Bird would destroy you. So, considering what I know about Larry Bird as a person, this was pretty boring. Like, it just came in there, and fans like you make me sick. You know,
you could just hear him. It's like the dialogue from the 2K games nowadays. You can just hear him reading whatever they put on the line. Yeah, fans like you make me sick. Turns around like Donovan McNabb on Sonny. Like, can I get the check? I got the parking brake.
And then he turns back around and goes, "I'm loving it.
I'm loving it.
All right, so this is completely off topic, but Dalton's listening, so he'll appreciate this too. So have you heard of this guy? I think his name's something Hauser. Cole Hauser, is that his name? Maybe not.
Sure, I don't know.
He is an actor, but that's not who I'm thinking of. What is the guy's fucking name? It's not Cole Hauser. God damn it.
Sprouse? You talking about the Sprouse kid?
No. This guy, hold on, I can tell you exactly. Hold on 1 second. Talk about how you do the film while I'm looking this up.
How I do the film? Oh, yeah. You want me to do my vlog? Okay, yeah, I could do that. So if I'm going to do a follow-up to this movie in any form or fashion, we already kind of elucidated on it. I want it to be that those guys essentially got a happy ending. I'm kind of thinking in the wake of that, if you got to do a follow-up, and I've got to follow with what happened in the original movie, so they kidnapped Deion Sanders, that you do a similar hype set up. But so I put this in the notes that somebody kind of worked out the math. The only reason Mike and Jimmy would go after Deion Sanders at the end of the movie like they do is if the Patriots were in contention for the divisional title, and Sanders was playing for the Cowboys in 96, a team that's not in their same division. And if they had won their game against the Cowboys that year, they would have already clinched the playoff spot. So the reality is that the Pats actually did lose to the Cowboys that year, which then brings about basically, again, the same kind of situation where they're trying to keep him from his game, etc. I think you could take, if this movie had been written better and worked better, basically with the suggestions that we made for it, I think you could have made something out of it that would have been funny enough, that would have warranted maybe a look at the sequel with more sports stars. And I don't hate the idea of kind of doing a similar deal, but the twist is you've got to get Lewis Scott involved. You've got to have Damon Wayans back and actually turn him loose a little bit. And now for some reason, he's involved in the plot too. It's the off season for basketball. He has made a big bet. They kind of played a little bit with that with the cop in this previous game, but he's made a big bet on this game, and he also stands to lose a lot of money if something doesn't happen. So my initial thought was he works with those two guys since they're kind of friends now to try to keep Deion Sanders out, and he uses his power and prestige as a way of keeping him out of the game. And there's a different commentary about like, yeah, but you're not a pathetic loser like these guys, like you're a rich guy, like why are you going through with this? That could be interesting. There's also, though, a part of me that thinks that they go to kidnap him and then find out that he's already being protected by Lewis Scott and his friends, who basically know that this is going to happen because of these guys. And so now it's kind of you remember that movie, I think it was called Neighbors with
Seth Rogen and Zac Efron.
Yeah, Seth Rogen. Yeah, the frat house and Seth Rogen and Rose Byrne were like the new couple with a new baby. It's that mentality. The sequel of that, of course, was then now one guy, you know,
they teamed up
with the other to deal with a new group.
Right.
Same idea. I like the same kind of idea where now they have to deal with like a new threat of this stuff happening behind the scenes. Because I think if you're going to keep going with we kidnapped a sports star so they can't, you know, make a game, you got to go bigger and better every time. It's got to get more and more ridiculous. Now they're going to kidnap, you know, another player from the Patriots. And it's going to be, well, shit. Okay, now it's not good enough that we kidnapped Deion. We got to get the other guy back, too. We've used the phrase a few times because Roger Ebert did. It's a germ of an idea. I don't fully have it fleshed out.
It was
there's something there.
It was a cosmic germ. That's what we called it.
Cosmic germ. It's what we called it on the show. I think there's an idea there that again, had this movie been better and funnier, I think a sequel could have also done. Of course, to be fair, Neighbors 2 was not as good as the first Neighbors either. So
lightning at a bottle. It's like it's like the girl from Temecula, whatever her name was.
Lisa from Temecula.
Lisa. Who said,
whose catchphrase is, cook my meat. And if you've seen the most recent sketch, they made a point to throw that in at the end, and it's the last thing she says, just so you remember where that character's from. Ugh.
Anyway, so I figured it out. We'll finish out the show like this. Paul Walter Hauser is the guy's name. This is a this is a picture of him winning a Golden Globe.
Sounds familiar.
Oh, don't look it up yet. Don't look it up yet, because I got to surprise you.
Okay.
This is the surprise. So this is him here. He won a Golden Globe for Best Supporting Actor in a Limited Series for a show called Blackbird, right? He also apparently did some work in it's either TNA or AEW. I think it was AEW. And he's getting into wrestling. He's actually going to wrestle Matt Cardona at a show coming up. Ooh. He's a big wrestling fan. During his Golden Globe speech for winning the award, he talked about wrestling, and it set the world on fire because everybody was like, oh, wow, this guy's talking about wrestling. He's a legitimate actor, and, you know, he all this, and that's pretty cool. Well, I kept looking at the guy going, why does this guy look so familiar? And then I see where I knew him from. This is where I saw him in originally. You might remember a little character named Richie.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. From It's Always Sunny.
He's the Juggalo.
He's the Juggalo.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
That's phenomenal. Yeah. No, I see it. I see it now. I knew that name sounded familiar. I don't know that it was from Sunny, but oh, that's good shit.
Which,
that's good stuff.
If I remember correctly, and probably a clip he would rather not come out, I believe at the end of that episode, he was in blackface because of the joke. The joke was that he had gone from It's Insane Clown Posse to, you know, they had that argument over blackface in cinema. So,
yes,
you know,
which is, I think it's why I don't remember that episode all that well, because I was like, I know I've seen this, but I can't remember it. It's not on anything. It's one of the ones that is restricted from the streaming services. So
that show could be kind of racist sometimes.
A little bit, like little the bit. Pilot.
Or when Charlie, it's always Charlie. It's always Charlie. All right.
Always Charlie.
That's it. Next week, we're going to be back with an all new episode of Extras and Epilogues. What are we reviewing next week?
Yes. So March Madness continues. I think we may as well just throw it in there because we're going to run out of the month before we do. You want to do Space Jam?
Oh yeah, let's do Space Jam. Let's do it. Then yeah, we can actually
that was coming happen anyway.
Then we can actually have a fucking guest on the show.
Right. Lindsay has been one chomping at the bit. And my other thought too is that this is the next to the last show of March, and April is all animation April. She's gonna be all over that month. So maybe we get her in here next week and then give her a break before she has to come back regularly.
Because she better put that work in. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah. Anyway. Next week.
Next week, Space Jam, classic. Much better than the sequel. Anyway, for now.
I haven't seen it.
I haven't either, and I don't care to.
No.
Product Placement the movie starring LeBron James and a series of corporate cartoon characters.
I might make myself, because I've seen the original Space Jam so many times, and I will watch it before we do the show, I might just go ahead and make myself watch the sequel just so I can comment on it. I think that's that a might good idea. Be a worthy.
Yeah, because I mean, we always talk about epilogues. That's got to be part of the epilogue. Because
right.
They made it.
So. Right, it has to be. There is a follow-up. So.
Okay. Yeah. Well, that's next week. Go back and listen to last night's All New Plays, Horror Headstone Hill. That was a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. Tomorrow we have an All New After Dark. We're talking about our five biggest disappointments in adaptation. So game to movie, TV show to movie, whatever. Like any adaptations we were disappointed in, we'll be talking about tomorrow. Sponsored by Netflix's Avatar. Let that sink in. Until then, and then Friday's Horse Time, of course. Until then, ladies and gentlemen, the balcony is closed. We'll be back next week for another round of March Madness. Double H, take us out.
Oh, shit, I didn't have anything for this. Daniel Stern is the MVP of this movie, and no one else. Bye.